Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, this is the Herd, wherever you may be. However you may be listening, we are live in Los Angeles on iHeartRadio, on Fox Sports Radio, and on FS1 right here. Thank you so much for joining us today. We are absolutely packed. Chris Sims, Nick Wright will be joining us. Joy Taylor, of course, as always, joining us. We don't consider her a guest. She's part of the fam.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. You know, I want to start with something that I think affects a lot of people listening to our show or watching our show. Sometimes professionally, our jobs, our careers, sometimes the culture changes. And it moves away from our strengths or it moves into our strengths. I hear a lot of talk about Tom Brady retiring after the Super Bowl. In the last couple of years, I've thought about it too. Yeah, it's going to happen, right? He's getting older, and I get it, and rings, titles. But I want you to think about this. There was a talk show host, still is, named Stephen Colbert. He was dying at CBS bombing. They were going to pull him off the air. He'd been on about 6 to 8 months. The show ratings were in the tank. He was too old and political. That was the knock on his show. Then Trump got to the White House, and the American culture changed. Politics is all anything anybody was talking about. Politics was the discussion in America. The culture in America changed, and it moved right into Stephen Colbert's wheelhouse. 2 months later, he had the number one hottest late night show in America. Stephen Colbert was about to get fired. The conversation and the culture moved in his direction. You see it in the NBA, where Dwight Howard's last 7 years, he's been useless. Steph Curry has been invaluable. Change eras, the opposite would be true. The NBA rules and analytics have benefited Steph Curry. Steph Curry is now what everybody is seeking. A small guy, not much size, can't defend, not very strong, but man, can he shoot threes. Dwight Howard centers, professionally, the sport has moved away from them. This happens all the time to lots of people. People are forgetting this. The sport of football has moved toward Tom Brady and, for that matter, Drew Brees. It is now a three-step drop. Get it out quick. Bubble screens. Accuracy. Precision. The American heroes in football for so many years were guys like Joe Namath and Terry Bradshaw. Brett Favre. Gunslingers who made big mistakes but had powerful arms. Cam Newton, 25 years ago, had a lot of Bradshaw, had a lot of Namath, had a lot of Favre. Big personality, transformational arm, not real precise. Brett Favre in today's NFL would be mistake prone. Joe Namath would be infuriating, much like Cam is. Rules change professionally. They often move away from people, men and women. But with Stephen Colbert, Steph Curry, Tom Brady, the culture of football is moving toward them. Arms wildly overrated. Breeze no longer throws downfield. Tom Brady doesn't have a deep threat. But defensive lines can't get to Brady, and they can't get to Breeze. Because it's a three-step and get-it-out league. It's lengthening Tom's career. I watched that game against the Chargers. Forget the Kansas City game. I watched that game against the LA Chargers. And that's a loaded defense. That was, at the time, the best defense in the NFL in the last 6 weeks of the year. Are you kidding me? He took it apart. It wasn't competitive. It was 35-7 at half. And I sat on the couch and I thought, why in God's name in the new NFL would he retire? The rules are lengthening his career. The game is getting more analytical and smarter. And that brings me to what Tom Brady told Jay Glazer 2 years ago. He said, the game actually, because of the way it's played now and officiated, has never been easier.
I feel like I've worked hard to get to this point. So going into my 18th year, I've learned a lot. You know, I've had the experiences, played the defense, played in the big games. And I still feel like I physically can perform at a really high level. So I think now this is the time to really start having fun. I mean, every time I go on the field, I feel like, all right, well, I know what to do. I know how to do it. I know where to go with the ball. And, you know, football is in some ways easier now for me than it ever was because, you know, it's just I've been doing it longer. I've had the experience. And, you know, hopefully that experience can pay off.
It has. Professionally, sometimes it all moves away from you. And sometimes it all moves toward you. It's moved toward Tom. Win or lose the Super Bowl, he's not retiring. Let me shift to this. This weekend, there was a really, really big play, and everybody's talking about it. The Saints were robbed in the Super Bowl. I can't believe it. Should have been pass interference. It wasn't called. That actually, to me, I picked the Rams and thought they were the better team, wasn't the most life-altering play of the weekend. The most life-altering play of the weekend happened in Kansas City. The play got a defensive coordinator fired, took away Patrick Mahomes' Super Bowl, continued Andy Reid's struggling postseason legacy, gave Tom Brady a ninth Super Bowl. It was the play where Dee Ford was simply lining up offsides.
Hands in the pocket. Flags out. Ball's picked. Ball's intercepted. This could be the game right here.
Offside. Defense, number 55.
Oh, can you believe it?
That play is getting people fired. Altering legacies. Dee Ford, that'll be on his resume forever. This is an organization that hadn't won a title since, what, 1970? 7-8 different things. Legacies, records, Super Bowls completely altered. And there's this feeling that, you know, Patrick Mahomes, he'll get back. Dan Marino, every bit as talented or more than Patrick Mahomes, much like Mahomes in his second year, set records and was the MVP and then lost in the Super Bowl and he never got back. Don't kid yourself. Aaron Rodgers got to a Super Bowl and he's never been back. His division got better. He got more expensive. He ad-libbed too much and got hurt. I look at Aaron now. I don't know how you could pick the Packers to win that division next year. How could you? Forget the NFC. Kansas City going forward has all sorts of obstacles. The Colts have the best GM in football, 9 draft picks, over $100 million, and a quirky, dysfunctional division mostly. The Chargers, in the same division of Kansas City, have, if not the best GM, the second best GM in the league. They also finished 12-4, a great roster, and they're moving into a stadium in 2 years, which will be free agent friendly. New England has the best coach and quarterback in league history, 12 draft picks, and a very winnable division. Have you looked at Kansas City's schedule next year? I don't know the order, but I know they'll play at Chicago and at New England. And I know they'll play the Chargers twice. And I know they're going to play the Colts and the Ravens and the Packers and the Vikings. I know they're going to play 7 playoff teams. And that doesn't include the Vikings or Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. Don't kid yourself. You think the replay, the outrage in New Orleans was the big moment of the weekend. Dee Ford simply lining up offsides, got a coordinator fired, Tom to his ninth Super Bowl. It'll never leave Dee Ford's resume. Patrick Mahomes, like a Dan Marino, has 10 to 12 great years left. There are no guarantees in the AFC. Belichick's still there, so is Brady. Colts and Chargers have great GMs. It's a tough division. Denver, well-run, usually will figure out their quarterback position. That play to me A lot of players in this league just play. A handful of them think while they play. That mental error, to me, hands down, the most transformative life and game altering play of the weekend.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
A lot of talk this weekend about the overtime rule. Oh, man, I wish it was like college. NFL's unfair. I don't like the overtime rule at all. It's interesting. Data came out yesterday. In the NFL, the overtime coin toss winner wins outright in the NFL 52% of the time, and in college, 55%. Oh, wait. The NFL is more fair, statistically. The college football overtime, it should be noted, eliminates special teams. That doesn't feel like football. It mostly eliminates defense. That doesn't feel like football. Everybody starts in field goal range. You know what college football overtime is? The mythology of fair. It's the parent that takes away the iPhone to ground their kid, and by the end of dinner, they give it back. They just don't have the stomach for it. The college football overtime is paralyzed by being fair. We do this in society all the time. We're going to give you both the ball, okay? And we're going to put you both in field goal range. Okay, well, what if we're tied? Then we're going to give you both the ball again, and we're going to put you both in field goal range. And you know who wins in college football overtime? The team that's less exhausted, as the score is 64-62. You ever watch one of these puppies going to 3 and 4 and 5? You're so paralyzed by being fair, it's exhausting. The NFL says this to you. Bro, you can both have the ball, you know, as long as you can make one stop and they don't go 80 yards on you. And then you both get the ball. By the way, this weekend, Rams didn't get the ball in overtime and won. Chiefs didn't get the ball and lost. So it was right along the data. It was 50-50. Two overtimes this weekend, it played out to the NFL average. The other thing about football, pro football, and football in general has never been about equal possessions. Very rarely does a football game end. You had 10 possessions, and I had 10 possessions. That's never been a moral dilemma in football. A moral dilemma would be, okay, Patriots get to play with helmets. Chiefs don't get to play with helmets. That would be unfair. Okay, Rams, you get to play in pads. Chiefs, you have to play like in your underwear. That would be a moral physical disadvantage. Where have we ever struggled with, I didn't get the same number of possessions? That's never been a moral dilemma in football. To me, I've always said it's very easy. We don't like the coin toss. Nobody earns it. It's too random. It's too arbitrary. I get that. I hear that a lot. I'm listening. So my overtime rules have always been simple. Football, more than any sport, home field means very little in the NBA, soccer, hockey. In football, you can't audible on the road. Audibling is what defines Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, and Drew Brees' careers, not their athletic ability or arm strength. So we eliminate the coin toss. The road team gets the ball first because football is designed for the home team to win. Look at the numbers. And the road team can defer the ball if they're the Bears and have a great defense. Or if they're the Patriots and like their offense, they can take the ball. It's up to them. They just have a choice. We give them, hey, you're paralyzed by fair in this whole thing. All right. Isn't it fair that you give the road team the choice?
Well, wouldn't it be more fair for the home team to get it since they earned it by winning more regular season games?
Well, remember, though, in the regular, you can't change overtime rules regular season to playoffs.
They are different already.
Well, I mean, don't you want to, within the game structure, have a rule that's set in stone the entire season?
Well, I agree that they should be the same throughout the entire season. I don't like ties.
How about week one? Who gets the ball? Because there is no better record. How about week two?
I don't have a problem with the coin flip as long as both teams get an opportunity
to
score. But
most people do have a problem with the coin flip. That's a big part of the discussion. It's too arbitrary.
I think it's arbitrary in the way that it is in the playoffs because the playoff rules are different because you can't end in a tie. And since the overtime rule changed in the playoffs, the coin toss winner winning percentage is 83.3%. So it's much higher.
What are you shaking your head at? Is that not?
That's not true?
No.
But the coin toss, the winner of the coin toss, since they changed the rule, wins just under 53% of the time.
But they're different rules because you can't tie.
Well,
I'm saying I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem with the coin toss as long as both teams get an opportunity to score.
Well, it's not a different rule. They will not allow it to end one way. But the rules are the same, which is you flip a coin, somebody gets it, and the team that gets the coin offense can close the game out with a touchdown.
But don't you think that if the Chiefs had gone and won, that everyone would still be yelling, well, we didn't get an opportunity to see Tom Brady?
No, I don't. I think there's so much anti-New England bias, it's palpable. I think a big part of this is, outside of Massachusetts, America hates the Patriots. America hates the Yankees. They hate Duke. They hate the Patriots. They're increasingly, they hate the Warriors. We tend to watch. Now, we watch them. We watch the Warriors. And we watch LeBron in the East. And but we hate them. And we think there's a sense of unfairness. Duke is too, I don't know, privileged. And the Golden State added superstars. And the Patriots are cheating. And I mean, the whole thing is there is this thing in America where we are seeking perfect fairness, and it's mythology.
No, I'm with you. I don't think that fairness actually exists. It's not something that is achievable just in theory. But I think that the way that the rules have changed to favor the offense, both teams should get an opportunity to get the ball. And those two overtime games were a good example. One went one way, one went the other.
Right.
I just think that had the Chiefs won the coin toss, gone down and won, the way that game was going, there would be a bunch of people saying, Tom Brady is the greatest ever in those moments. We should have seen an opportunity for Tom Brady to go down and do what he does. And that would have, because people would have said, oh, well, the Chiefs, they just got there because they won the coin toss. It would have gone either way in that game.
Well, Drew Brees is a Hall of Famer, best home field advantage, got it and lost. And so I don't think I contend that this weekend was the perfect example of how overtime works in the NFL, is that one team won the coin flip and won, and one team won it and lost, and one home team lost, one home team won, that this is the great parity sport. And we've never been paralyzed by possessions. So why are we paralyzed here? And for the record, this idea that if you get the ball first, you generally win, it's not true. It's very difficult. There's only one Tom Brady in the league. Most of the teams that get it do not drive down. Drew Brees, a Hall of Famer, he didn't drive down. Generally speaking, I don't have the numbers in front of you, both teams do get the ball. What Brady did sounds like it happens all the time. Mitch Trubisky gets that ball, he doesn't drive down. You know, I mean, Philip Rivers, as good as he is, probably doesn't drive down. Most of the time, it is two possessions. I don't want people to think that this is the way it always works. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but generally, I would say overwhelmingly, both teams, overtime works like the Saints-Rams game. Both teams got it. It's rarely just the team gets it, goes down, scores a touchdown.
Hi, it's The Herd. Almost half of Americans make a New Year's resolution every single year. One resolution worth sticking to this year, keeping your home and your family safe. That's why I recommend Simply Safe Home Security. Now is the time to act and protect your home and your assets with Simply Safe Home Security. With Simply Safe, there's no contract, ever. There's no price markup from any middleman. There's no installation window. Most importantly, their system is engineered to do one thing brilliantly: protect. If a storm takes out your power, SimpliSafe is ready. Intruder cuts your phone line, SimpliSafe is ready. Somebody destroys your keypad or siren, SimpliSafe will still get you the help you need. 24/7 home security, no contracts or catches. PC Magazine named SimpliSafe both editor's choice and reader's choice for 2018. Just go to simplisafe.com/herd. Protect your home, assets, and family today. Simplisafe.com/herd. Simplisafe.com/herd.
Cole Beasley is a kind of a slot receiver for the Dallas Cowboys. He said yesterday the Cowboys front office pushes certain wide receiver targets to get the ball. Yeah, like Amari Cooper. He's way better. It's a little off-field story, and it got me thinking about the Dallas Cowboys. The blue bloods in the NFL, I mean, these are the old-time, well-run teams. Green Bay, New York Giants, Pittsburgh Steelers, Denver Broncos. They are very tip-top, well-run, meticulous in their attention to detail. No, actually, the Packers and the Giants, Pittsburgh and Denver, are all sorts of drama. I mean, the Packers and Mike McCarthy, Aaron Rodgers, all sorts of drama. Giants are fear-based, can't get rid of Eli, should have 2 years ago. Pittsburgh makes more noise than, you know, a Pearl Jam concert. And Denver, love John Elway, but I don't know. Something's not quite right there, starting with a quarterback spot. Dallas, though, viewed as dysfunctional, is becoming a little bit like the late 1990 New York Yankees. Yeah, the owner makes a lot of noise, but Posada, Jeter, Mariano Rivera, actually a really good core, drafted very well. Right now, the Dallas Cowboys have the best stadium in the NFL, the best practice facility, the best linebacking duo, and I would say the best young defense in the National Football League. They found their franchise quarterback smartly in the fourth round. They have drafted exceptionally well. They had the best in-season trade with Amari Cooper. They've had one coach for 8.5 years. And, oh, by the way, Dez Bryant was a little problematic. He's gone. And the offensive coordinator, not progressive. He's gone. I would put Dallas in a very exclusive club right now. And you can't base it all on championships. I mean, look at this weekend. A replay, D Ford's hands offside. Some of playoff football is coin flip stuff. But I would put Dallas in a group of 5 or 6 really well-run organizations. Philadelphia, New England, Rams, Colts, and Dallas. And you start looking around this franchise, and, you know, George Steinbrenner made a lot of noise, and Jerry's got some vanity and a $250 million yacht, and he wants to go on radio every week like Steinbrenner did. But Dallas is built inside out like the smart teams. Found their quarterback in the fourth round. Patriots found theirs in the sixth. Seahawks found Russell Wilson in the third. Draft, linebackers. The blue bloods increasingly in this sport are dripping blood. Packers are a mess. Giants fear-based. Pittsburgh too much noise. Denver can't get attacked together. I'd say Dallas right now is incredibly functional.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Eric Mangini, former Cleveland head coach, and lives in Cleveland still. I'm beloved in Cleveland.
Are you?
Yeah, bring my name up in Cleveland sometime in a restaurant, see if he gets you a good seat.
I'm sure it will.
So, your history with the Patriots, defensive coordinator, been there a long time. Really, I've leaned on you for years. You know, going in to the New England Kansas City game, I love New England against the Chargers. Had to go 3,000 miles again. I just thought there was going to be a little bit of an urgency Patriots rest. That I love Kansas City this weekend, and you didn't. You liked New England going in. Why?
Well, here's the conflict I had internally. Is if you look at it, the shifts, the motions, the multiple personnel groups playing on the road, a mobile quarterback, everything said that Kansas City should win. And I thought that objectively, but after experiencing what I experienced in New England and understanding that process and the people that were involved, if I had to put money on the game, I would have put money on New England. And you saw it play out in the first half where Patrick Mahomes, you've got a single coverage with a rookie cornerback on Travis Kelce, and Mahomes really doesn't go to him very much.
Yeah.
You know, and missing things like that, or the way that New England took advantage of the deep setting by the offensive tackles that Kansas City does to bring their ends up the field and then underneath and then wrap their tackles around to keep them in the pocket. Those types of things Kansas City didn't figure out in the first half, and they get shut out. Now, later on in the game, they started to figure some of those things out, but it's that edge of experience and their ability to do things to take away strengths and exploit weaknesses that gives him a shot against anybody, regardless of what the talent level is.
By the way, speaking of talent level, you've coached in this league twice. You know, there's a real roll of the dice what the Rams did. Aqib Talib, Marcus Peters, and Ndamukong Suh, Dante Fowler. Dante Fowler was an underachiever. Sue's been an underachiever. Talib's good when he's winning. Marcus Peters is a pain in the butt. Even his college coach, Andy Reid, moved off him. What do you make of it now that it got to the Super Bowl? Can the Rams pump their chest and go, "We were right"?
Look, whenever you go down this road, it's great as long as you're winning. It's fantastic as long as you're winning. It's when you hit those patches of adversity that those guys that have questionable pass become a real problem. And I experienced it in Cleveland in 95. We're projected to go to the Super Bowl. The team announces they're moving. We hit adversity. And there were guys there that kind of similar makeup. And when all that happened, everybody was looking for a life raft. And you saw it to some degree late in the season with the Rams, where the defense regressed, and those are the guys making business decisions. I'm not going to get hurt before the playoffs. I'm going to go into a little bit of cruise control. Now, that being said, this is where guys like that have real value. It's easy to coach in the playoffs. It's really easy to coach in the Super Bowl because everybody's dialed in. Everybody's going to be the best form of themselves. Nobody wants to be the guy that loses the game. Everybody wants to be the guy that makes play. It's perfect now. Is it a model that's sustainable? Yeah, if you can win like the Rams did, yeah, it'll be great. You hit a patch of adversity, good luck.
Talk about Super Bowl prep. You've prepped for Super Bowls before. New England has a decided advantage in experience here. Super Bowl prep advantage New England, right?
Yeah, they've played in 9 Super Bowls and 10 Thursday night games. So this is no different for them than getting getting ready for a schedule like a Thursday night game. It's just another part of their process. And going to the first Super Bowl was tough. You've got pressure from family and friends and the media, a change in the environment. All these things are pulling at you. And if you don't know how to handle that and navigate through that, you're at a pretty big disadvantage. Even how do you use this week versus the second week? How do you make sure that the guys don't get too high too early? How do you deal with the extended pregame? How do you deal with the extended halftime? All those things for New England, it's just another part of the process.
It's keeping players dialed in for 2 weeks. Belichick, obviously, they added 8 new plays in the hotel lobby the morning of the game over Kansas City. Would Belichick keep some stuff, some tricks to keep players focused and driven? Don't you lay out the game plan by Saturday morning?
Well, yeah, you're gonna go through this week, and the bulk of the plan is in this week when you're home, when you're working in your traditional format. Now, that being said, you have time to watch more tape. You find some other things. So during that second week, you're gonna keep introducing those things to the guys. And if you find something Sunday morning or Sunday before the game, and you've got an experienced group, you're gonna go to them and say, "Look, I think we got a shot to hit this. Let's go with it." Just like you saw last weekend, where when you've got a young group or a group that's not used to adjusting or a group that's not used to dealing with the level of anxiety and pressure that goes into a Super Bowl, you put those plays in, it could be an absolute disaster.
Yeah, I mean, Rams' first hour were bailing water. Patriots' first hour were in total control. They both faced the same harsh road environment. Okay, end of the Rams-Saints. Controversy, blown call, no call. Blame the refs. Let's sue the NFL. What'd you make of that mess in New Orleans?
Well, look, I've heard that there would have been about 30 seconds left in the game if they were able to run the ball 3 times after the pass interference call or no call. In the first game, the Rams scored at the end of the half with 26 seconds left. So there's no guarantee that the Rams couldn't have gotten the ball and gone down and kicked a field goal. Okay, that being said, there was a ton of football that took place after that moment. They had a chance to stop them. Then they got the ball in overtime. They got a questionable pass interference call in their favor, the Saints did, in overtime. And then the Rams still had to go down and kick a 57-yard field goal to win the game. So my question is, was it so caught up in that moment, so caught up in the no call, that it cost them the game after that? Human error is part of football. That happens. And where you stand on those calls depend on where you sit. I think the tuck rule was a great call in New England, but I was in New England at the time. It's just, now, and we had to do things to win the game there.
Yeah.
After that,
yeah,
call.
People forget the tuck rule. There was a lot after that.
There was, yeah. The human error is part of the game, and it's not like the game ended at that moment, and it's not like the Saints didn't have an opportunity to win after that moment, and they got the ball first in overtime, just like New England did. They could have walked down the field and scored a touchdown, but they didn't.
Overtime rules. One of the things about overtime I like in the NFL that I don't like in college is the NFL doesn't have this mythology. They're not paralyzed by it. NFL's like, yeah, you can both have the ball as long as you can make a stop. And then you get the ball too. And by the way, most of the time that happens. College football, they give both teams the ball, they put them in field goal range, and then if you both score, and we bring it out, and they're afraid to not be fair. But in college football, the games end up being 62-60, and the least exhausted team wins. The NFL and college football, overtime toss winner, NFL actually is more fair than college football statistically. The overtime's never bothered me in the NFL. I think some of it is that we like Mahomes. He's fresh, he's new, he's fun, and he didn't get the ball in overtime, and it ticks us off, and we hate the Patriots. The overtime rule doesn't bother me. Does it bother you?
It doesn't bother me. I think it's more fair than it has been. I wouldn't mind, though, each team getting possession. So New England goes down, they score a touchdown, and then Kansas City gets a chance to score as well. Like, give each one a possession outside of just the field goal versus touchdown way that it's set up now. I don't think there'd be any problem with that. I know that player safety is an issue.
Yes.
And they don't want to extend the game. So maybe during the regular season, you leave it as is. And in the postseason, each team gets one chance, regardless of whether you score a touchdown the first drive or not.
But the concern by the NFL is the longer a game goes, the injuries increase. So as you go to overtime, it's like skiing. They always say your last run of the day skiing, go slow. That's when you break your knee. In football, as the game goes to overtime, statistically, the injuries increase. So if Kansas City did take the ball and soared all the way down, now we got a real quarter going on.
Well, but look, the difference in playoff football versus regular season football is you're going to keep going in overtime until there's a winner. There are no ties. So that's what I'm saying. If you kept it the same during the regular season but gave each team at least one possession in the postseason, then I think you could find a compromise between player safety and someone saying we didn't have an opportunity that we should have had.
Finally, Eric Mangini, former NFL head coach, couple of places, defensive coordinator with the Patriots. I said this a couple days ago, is that, you know, we've got all these new quarterbacks. We got Mahomes and we got Deshaun Watson and we got, you know, Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold. The one kid that does remind me of Brady, right? Because we're always comparing. Who's the next Michael? Who's the next LeBron? Right? We're always comparing. Jared Goff reminds me a lot of Brady. He's tall and gawky when he came in. California kid, really stable family, incredibly coachable, kind of quiet and demure, handsome kid, but you don't see him in the weather. You don't see him in the news. And I, you know, I kind of look at them and I'm like, precise passers, pocket throwers, move well within the pocket, but you don't want him running. I see some Brady in Goff.
Yeah.
You were with Brady early.
I was with Brady early, and I've told this story a bunch of times. Tom Brady was not Tom Brady when he first came out. And that first season that he was there, post-practice, we'd always have these one-on-ones. I had the DBs. Brad Seeley would be out there. He was the special teams coach at the time. And we'd bet a dollar on each one of the reps. And I won a ton of dollars because Tom would throw the ball in the dirt or he'd miss a guy wide. So he was able to grow because he had traits. And he had tremendous traits. And that work ethic, the thing I don't know about Goff is does he have that same type of work ethic? And the other thing that's difficult to predict is with fame, with money, with success, with consistent success, how much do you change? So Tom, yeah, he's got a different haircut and he looks a little bit more fashionable than he did back in the day, but he's still the same person. He still works the same way every day. And to me, that's unique. The other thing about Tom is there's an unselfishness in his play. He doesn't need to have giant statistics. He doesn't need to feed the ball to Gronkowski. He's going to throw to the open receiver. And that takes a lot of discipline.
A ton.
And it takes an absence of ego where you're not worried if you run the ball 40 times and your numbers look horrible. He just wants to win. So it's hard to predict how anybody's going to deal with extended success like Tom has.
Yeah. Also, another thing is that Patriots have had incredible continuity among their staff, whereas as the kind of hot franchise, the Rams are already getting their staff poached by everybody in the league, where the Patriots have Dante Scarnecchia, McDaniel's been there forever, they got the same running back coach. I mean, Tom, they got the same parking spaces painted in the facility for 20 years. Rams get a little success. Like Nick Saban now, everybody's poaching that staff. That's part of it.
You're going to have the staff poach. A lot of these players that they acquired are on one-year deals. That's going to turn over. They've given away draft picks. It's hard to sustain that model. And when you look at the continuity in New England, a guy like Dante Scarnecchia, and I said this to you before, he should get the MVP trophy, the offensive line coach. The things that he's been able to do with that group are incredible. And Josh McDaniels, his ability to connect with Tom and to anticipate what defenses are doing, it's invaluable. The other thing about New England is they develop young coaches. It's the PhD program, poor, hungry, and driven, and you grow up in the system. And when someone does move on, there's someone who's been raised in that system and worked and earned an opportunity to move into the higher spot.
They call it the PhD?
Poor, hungry, and driven. Yeah, you get your PhD.
That's
so
great.
You go find guys that are smart and hardworking and are willing to do whatever they have to have an opportunity to learn. And as they succeed, it's a little bit like Survivor. You get promoted. And the ones that can't fit into that community, they move to other places.
I like that. Goulet, what'd you make of that? PhD.
It's impressive. Is that your strategy?
Yeah, it is.
Keep us all poor?
And hungry and driven.
2020s is another name, 20 years old and $20,000 a year. So it could be a PhD or a 2020, either one.
I love all these little slogans.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
I said before the Colts game against the Chiefs, Chris Sims, Phil Sims' kid, came out. And Chris played 5 years in the NFL, Texas, high school star. And Chris came out before the game, and he said, I remember he said this, he goes, Mahomes looks way more comfortable in this weather than Andrew Luck does. And Andrew Luck played the worst game I've seen him play in like 3 years. And I told my staff, I'm like, man, Chris Sims nailed it. I mean, Andrew Luck just looked uncomfortable. And Patrick Mahomes, though he didn't play great, looked very comfortable. Chris Sims also was a former Patriot coaching assistant. He was part of their quality control scouting department, and he is joining us via the Coward Global Satellite Network. In the time you spent there, in the 12 months, Chris, that you spent there, I've said before, dynasties create animosity. It can be Serena, UConn women's basketball, the Yankees, Duke basketball. You know, we don't get bored with them because the ratings are still great, but we start resenting them. What was the one thing you took away from the year with the Patriots where you felt like, wow, they do blank better than everybody else?
Oh, there's a lot of things they do better than everybody else, and that's why it's no coincidence that they've dominated football for the 21st century in the NFL, in a league where we try to make the rules even and make everything even on a, you know, on an equal playing field. But I think the big thing is just the daily attention to detail. The daily attention to detail, Colin, and then the daily work ethic. It just didn't matter if it was May 8th or if it was January 8th. That organization goes into the building on a daily basis with a purpose. Things are going to get done. They're not worried about what time they're going to get home to their family or their kids or their wives. It's about making the New England Patriots team better every day. And I think that's kind of a little dirty secret around the NFL, at least in my eyes sometimes, is, you know, the coaches, the organization, they outcompete other organizations. And when the year's all done, they have 1,000 more work hours in the office compared to the other teams in the NFL. And I just think it's one part of their greatness, Colin.
You played for John Gruden in college, Mack Brown, Jeff Fisher, Josh McDaniels, and you also played quarterback. Even though you were in the building, you played the position. Are you surprised that, you know, Brady, McDaniels, Belichick, I mean, we've had one little dust up. I think it was a love triangle and Garoppolo got in the way and they got him out of town. Are you surprised at the durability and the expansiveness and how long it's last without a lot of controversy or movement?
I mean, it is surprising, especially in the NFL with the egos, the personalities you have, the competitiveness of all the men that are involved, of course, in the NFL in general. But not surprising, I think, once you get there and you realize, wow, I mean, these guys are such professionals. And another thing that New England does is they accumulate guys across the NFL through the draft, free agency, that love football and are in it to win football games and not nickel and dime the organization compensation for every extra cent or dollar or anything like that. But I think it's the non-egos that are attached there. Josh McDaniels, he's a phenomenal game planner. Tom Brady knows his role, even though he's the face of the franchise, greatest quarterback ever, all of that. He still understands when McDaniels or Belichick give him an order, he has to listen to that. So it is amazing that it's gone just this long without just, you know, a few little dust-ups here and there. But I think once you get to know the individuals and the type of individuals that Bill Belichick has surrounded himself in New England, you'll realize that it's a very selfless group, and they really are into just out-detailing, out-schematically game-planning teams on a weekly basis. And, hey, there was a sign, Colin, this will always stand out in my mind, where I was up in this little corner of the front office, right, where it said, "We are not collecting players. We are building a team." And that never rang more true than in New England. They have a plan of attack all offseason, every season, how they want to attack a game, how they want to build their team, how they want to rebuild it for a new year. And that's what makes them so special.
Now, you could argue the Rams are collecting players to some degree. Now, they built a nice culture, but they're kind of the new model, which is a little like Philadelphia and Howie Roseman. We're going to go free agency. We're going to go trades. Now, you were around with the Bucks, with the Titans, with the Broncos. You know, when you were in Denver, they did a little bit of that. Does it necessarily mean if you go opposite of the Patriots, take your experience, what do you make of the Rams model?
Yeah, the Rams model, I appreciate it for this simple fact. They pushed their chips in the middle of the table before the last two seasons and said, "We're trying to win a Super Bowl. We're not trying to go to the playoffs. We're not trying to be the most improved team in football. We are trying to win a Super Bowl." And we've seen that with the acquisitions of not only McVay, but, of course, trading, getting Aqib Talib, Marcus Peters, and Ndamukong Suh. I think the thing I look about, it is sustainable what the Rams are doing. Of course, they're going to have to be creative with balancing their money on a yearly basis when you do it this way. But I think the big thing is that would scare me about this type of model, and it didn't happen this year, and hopefully it doesn't happen with the Super Bowl, but it's a lot like the Seahawks. There's lack of depth on the team.
Yes.
That's what would worry me about the long-term prospects of doing it this way. And it even worries me in this specific matchup, because I know New England, when they play teams like this that lack depth, they want to get to the huddle quick. They want to wear out the Aaron Donalds of the world. So by the end of the fourth quarter, they can't get after the quarterback because they've had 9 million plays and schemes to think about throughout the first three quarters.
As somebody who played the position, I got to ask you, we were in Kansas City, and I said, you kind of tipped me out before the game. You had said Luck doesn't look comfortable, and frankly, he was not. Mahomes did. When you watch Mahomes play, he's obviously gifted. What do you take away from it, sitting on the field watching Mahomes going forward as somebody who played the position? Just gifts? Did he have control of the game? Did you feel he was good pre-snap? What was your takeaway watching him live?
Yeah, definitely. Good question. And I really appreciate you giving me the shout out for my, you know, little pregame observation. Seriously, that was very nice of you. So thanks for that, dude. But in all seriousness, I think the first thing that jumps out to you with Mahomes is his, you know, I want to say his aura, his personality. He was very unfazed as soon as he walked on the field in pregame warmups. I could just tell he was energized by the moment. He wasn't like, oh no, this is a divisional playoff game, I need to be nervous. But then the next thing, Colin, is the pure physical talent. It was one of those things where I watched Andrew Luck warm up and I said, okay, you know, it's good, but it's not great. He's struggling a little in the elements. And I said, let me walk down here and see Patrick Mahomes. And it's one of those things where, no joke, the first throw you see, you go, whoa, that was a little different. Damn, did that ball spin really hard in place. And damn, did it cover a lot of ground in a whole lot of hurry. And I think that's what you just the physical ability and just the naturalness in which he throws the football, I think, is the first thing that jumps out to me as an ex-quarterback.
By the way, Brady against Jared Goff. Like Jared Goff, he's a tall, thin kid. I don't think he's ever going to be, you know, I think I look back at your career and I remember putting on weight. A buddy of mine, Brock Huerto, has said, I could drink protein shakes all day. I couldn't put the weight on. And I look at Jared Goff as always going to be kind of thin, a little gangly. But like you, he throws a very pretty football. I thought he outplayed Breeze against New Orleans. I really did, Chris. I thought he really played well late. What do you take of him watching him live and on tape and all throughout the course of the year?
Yeah, I mean, very impressed with Jared Goff. I mean, especially, hey, he hit a little bit of a lull at the end of the season. We know that, where he didn't play his best football against the Bears, the Eagles. But I would argue before that, okay, he did some things that I still had questions about. You know, and I know last year he threw for 28 touchdowns and 7 interceptions. But I would also argue that Sean McVay made the game very easy for him. And the teams that were playing the Rams were still getting used to McVay's offense. This year, especially before that Eagles and Bears game, the thing I take into account about evaluating a quarterback is the things they do off schedule, right? When Sean McVay doesn't call the right play and there's nothing there, there's nothing open, or he has pressure. And he made so many plays off script, whether it was the Vikings game or the Chiefs game that we saw all in primetime, the Green Bay Packers game, where I just said, whoa, there was nothing here. And he threw a 30-yard missile into very tight coverage right on the money. I think he got his swagger back a little bit last week, his confidence, and I do agree with you. He out-dueled Drew Brees in New Orleans, which is impressive. He made the biggest, most impactful throws of the football game, whether it was the go route before halftime or being under pressure in overtime and throwing balls in the bootleg where he had people hitting him as he was throwing it. You know, the continued progression is impressive for Goff, and I think we're going to be seeing him for a whole lot of years, him and McVay together.
Say hi to your dad. I love him. NBC Sports, Chris Sims, you do a great job. Keep kicking butt. Love having you on the show. Thanks for making time for us, Chris.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Have a good week, Colin.